The weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity. But understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world.
I'm your host, Deanna Hintz, Associate Professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. In July, wildfires burned across Canada and Minnesota, which sent smoke across the Great Lakes and into Illinois. The smoke caused periods of poor air quality across Illinois, raising concerns about our health. While wildfire smoke has affected Illinois before, scientists are watching to see if these events could become more common as the climate warms. Joining us today to talk about wildfire smoke, how it travels, and what it means for Illinois is Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist for the Prairie Research Institute, and Jeff Frame, Professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks.
Jeff, let's start off with the meteorology. What kinds of weather patterns worsen wildfires?
Right. So wildfires need a few events to ignite and to spread. Number one is an ignition source. Unfortunately, about 85% of all wildfires are caused by humans. And then for a fire to spread and thrive, it needs hot, dry conditions. So that would be warm temperatures with relatively low relative humidity and strong winds to allow the fire to not only travel faster, but also to loft embers and sparks and other things, allowing a fire to travel even faster and even jump roads and other fire breaks.
Well, and then sometimes that smoke seems to travel thousands of miles at times. How do atmospheric conditions help smoke from, say, Canada travel all the way here to us in Illinois?
Right. So let's start on a small scale. Consider a campfire. And if there's a little breeze blowing, you have a campfire going, you'll notice that one side of the fire is going to be downwind or in the direction the wind is blowing. And if you stand on that side of the fire, you're going to get a lot of smoke, and you probably don't want to do that. Whereas the other side of the fire, even if you get real close up, right, if you're upwind, if the wind is blowing away from you, you'll sense some of the heat, but you're not going to sense any of that smoke. So just like a campfire or a little fire, these big wildfires or forest fires, all the smoke is just blown by the prevailing winds in whatever direction they're going. And up in the upper atmosphere, it's not unusual at all to see these winds going 50 or even 100 miles an hour. That's up about, again, 6 to 9 miles above our heads, where the jet airplanes fly, get up into the jet stream, if you will. And so it doesn't take long at all for the smoke to go the several hundred miles from northern Minnesota or southern Canada here into Illinois.
Well, sometimes we see real differences in how that's far that smoke can travel, right? Like sometimes it stays closer to the ground, but sometimes it can get lofted up into those high winds high in the atmosphere and travel significant distances. So what are some of the conditions that will determine whether it gets high up in the atmosphere versus staying close to the ground?
Right. And that has real big implications for air quality as well, which we'll get into later. And whereas smoke, if it's only high up in the atmosphere, a few miles high or several miles high, that could make a pretty sunset. It could make things seem a little bit dimmer than usual during the day. But in terms of public health, that's not really going to do a whole lot. The wildfire smoke to impact air quality and public health really has to be down closer to the surface. And what happens is, well, since those winds aloft are much faster than the winds near the surface, well, it turns out that if a fire tends to be farther away, a lot more often you're going to get that high-level smoke, whereas that surface smoke just isn't going to be able to make it, 1,000-plus miles, like some of the wildfires burning out in Oregon and Washington State right now. It's very hard for that low-level smoke to get in here and degrade our air quality. Also, obviously, size of the fire plays a role, right? If you just have a bigger fire, a bigger conflagration, of stuff burning, that's going to release a lot more smoke and make things that much more worse.
Well, and that brings back a good point, because I think every time one of these types of events happens, everyone's just anxiously waiting for that smoke to leave. So how long does it typically take for the air quality to improve?
It really, really depends on how the weather pattern is changing. So, for example, if we have, say, smoke and fires in northern Minnesota, let's say, and we just have persistent airflow out of that region, so say a wind out of the northwest, well, that smoke can settle over the area and keep getting blown in here over a period of sometimes several days. That's a lot more common when you're a lot closer to those wildfires. Whereas if the fire is farther away, the smoke often has to travel along more specific trajectory to reach your area, like if it's way up in northern Canada or way out in the west or something like that. And so to get that smoke out of there, again, what has to happen is either you get rain or you get a shift in the prevailing winds at the surface to blow all that smoke on out of here. And that can it can last anywhere from several hours to maybe several days. We didn't experience that here, but off to the north, parts of Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin, parts of southern Canada did see that this year, with the smoke just lasting for days and days and days.
Well, and Trent, let's bring this over to you. So when we're thinking about then this wildfire smoke, especially if it's lingering for long periods of time, what makes that smoke a concern for air quality? What's some of the impacts that it can have?
Yeah, so, when we have smoke, it is a combination of different chemicals in the atmosphere, some of which are in gas form, which we can't see, but can nonetheless be irritating for our lungs and our respiratory pathways. One of the more damaging pollutants, though, is something called particulate matter, which is just little, very, very small solids suspended in the air. Jeff kind of spoke about this a little bit. And in particular, there's two categories, PM particulate matter 2.5 and particulate matter 10. Those are two different, basically referring to the size of that particulate matter in microns. So to give you an idea, a single, particle of PM 2.5 pollution is something like 30 times smaller than a single grain of sand. So we can't perceive it with our eye just looking at it, and it is small enough to both get into our airways and our lungs as well as our bloodstream. So it's really those pollutants that we see hugely elevated numbers, dangerously elevated numbers, when we have this type of wildfire smoke that, like Jeff mentioned, can reach down to the surface where we are, we breathe it in. And some of the health impacts that we see, especially respiratory and pulmonary issues with heart and lungs, especially those who are already having pre-existing conditions like asthma, COPD. But across the board, and especially when we get up to those very, very unhealthy categories that the EPA classifies, that's when we really start to see a lot of potentially damaging health impacts from the air pollution.
Right. And another point on that, too, is you might wonder, you know, when you get the smoke coming in from hundreds of miles away, why doesn't it smell nice like a campfire? Right. Yes. Why does it kind of smell like, you know, industrial pollution? Yeah. If it's, you know, it's burning trees, right? It's the same stuff as in a campfire. Well, the chemicals that give campfire smoke kind of its nice aroma are very long organic molecules composed primarily of hydrogen and oxygen, or hydrocarbons. And as these long molecules, of course, are traveling hundreds of miles, they're subject to a lot of sun, including some UV light. And so that UV light can react with these longer molecules and break them down into shorter molecules, which tend to be more stable. Things like formaldehyde, which, of course, is not a very nice smelling thing. That's, you know, a couple carbons and a few more hydrogens. But this isn't a chemistry show. This is a weather show. So don't want anyone to have an adverse reaction there. But anyway, so that's why this wildfire smoke doesn't really smell like your campfire that you might have on a nice summer or fall evening.
Probably, thankfully, so people aren't out there trying to inhale it, you know, try to capture that high.
If you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Deanna Hintz, Associate Professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We're talking about how wildfire smoke is affecting the U.S. and its connection to climate change with Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist for the Prairie Research Institute, and Jeff Frame, Professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. So Trent, we've been speaking about this number, AQI, which stands for Air Quality Index. How does PM2.5 factor into that? And especially when we're seeing these fluctuations of our air quality index over, say, the summer especially, how are some of these really high numbers, like 638 on a scale of 500, I mean, how unusual is that?
Yeah, it's extremely unusual. Basically, what the air quality index does, and it's put out by the Environmental Protection Agency at the federal level, is it's monitoring different types of pollutants. The ones that are most relevant for us here in Illinois are the ones we just talked about, PM2.5 and ozone. And what it does is it takes the concentration that it's measuring at a bunch of different stations across the state and converts it to this standardized number that generally ranges from 0 to 500. And that 0 to 500 range is for a daily average. So we can measure peak pollutant times, depending, like, for example, we typically see peak pollution in either the afternoon, especially right around people when they're going home, that kind of congestion from their cars can cause that. And then you sort of average that out, say, what was the daily average? And it's really that daily average AQI that is best corresponding with the health implications, because that's kind of getting your aggregate of how much people were exposed to things. So that 638 that was measured in Chicago July of this year is exceptional. It means that essentially the concentrations were as high as they have ever been measured at those sites in Chicago. That particular day on July 16th of this year, the Northbrook Water Plant had an average PM2.5 AQI of 438, meaning that the daily average was very close to the top of that range. And to give you a perspective, the previous high day was for any station in the city of Chicago was 200. The AQI was 200, so it was more than double the previous high day. So we're talking about some record-breaking poor air quality, which is a weird thing to say, but the yes. Concentrations were exceptionally high. And certainly seeing photos of, you know, where you couldn't see Navy Pier from drones out in Lake Michigan, it was just pretty incredible. But those days, that kind of period of time between the 16th, 17th, 18th of July was some of the worst air quality we've seen in sort of modern history, certainly since the Clean Air Act in the city of Chicago.
So let's turn and talk a little bit about where the smoke is coming from and why. Trent or Jeff, why does Canada tend to be such a major source of wildfire smoke for our region?
Well, a lot of Canada is made up by forests. And you say, well, there are forests in a lot of the eastern U.S. and Appalachia, and there are forests, you know, in a lot of the western United States. The thing about a lot of Canada is it's very, very sparsely populated. You know, you think about Toronto and Montreal and Vancouver and all these great cities in Canada. Yeah, basically, you know, I think I read somewhere that like something like 90% of Canada's population lives within a couple hundred miles of the U.S. border,
yeah.
Which means that most of the rest of the country is sparsely populated or else completely uninhabited. And so if you have a completely uninhabited region, like even northern Ontario, northern Manitoba, Saskatchewan, all those provinces there, that means you also have no roads. And so if you have no roads, you have no way to get that fire suppression, you know, vehicles in there or truck water in there, or else you have to drop, you know, fire suppressant from aircraft on there. And let's not forget about the big reason why we engage in wildfire suppression in this country. And, you know, this is one bit of a contentious political issue, is that, you know, we started doing this back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And it turns out that's probably made fires worse because fire is a natural part of any forest ecosystem. So why would we put it out? Simple thing is to save human structures, settlements, and cities. And if you don't have any human structures, settlements, or cities in this forested area, why are you going to put it out? You know, is it really worth it? And so that's why, you know, Canada is kind of unique in that way. Now, in 2023, there were fires way up in northern Canada, very remote, that were put out. Now, these fires that started, most of them back on July 13th, they're out. Either a combination of, you know, firefighters or just good old-fashioned rain put those out. So, again, that source of fires pretty much gone there.
If you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Deanna Hintz, Associate Professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We're talking about how wildfire smoke is affecting the U.S. and its connection to climate change with Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist for the Prairie Research Institute, and Jeff Frame, Professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Well, Trent, so, I mean, Canada's landscape is hugely dominated by these boreal forests, but there has been more research around what's possibly making these forests much more vulnerable to especially large and vicious wildfires. Can you speak a little bit more about what conditions could be contributing to this particular outcome?
Yeah, so there's the makeup of the forests themselves, as Jeff spoke to, of the human intervention over the last 100 years or so, especially post-European settlement in Canada and the United States, has mainly been one of suppression. I'm gonna knock Smokey the Bear here because it was always, you can prevent forest fires. That was an idea of suppression. And so what part of that, what that's done is it's built up a lot of fuel that can transfer what it would normally be a ground fire up to a canopy fire that then spreads much more rapidly. So the makeup of the forests, especially around developed areas where we've seen so much suppression over the last several decades, has been a big issue. The other part of it is climate change. Even in an area that gets a decent amount of rain in a given year, we've seen both temperatures and temperatures go up in the summertime, humidity go down. And overall, we can get those kind of combinations of warmer and drier weather that also combined with drought, which is more ephemeral in that region, dries out that fuel, dries out that vegetation, allows those fires to spark. And so when we look at projections into the future and overall trends over the last several decades, this region of Canada, along with much of the central western parts of North America, have gotten slightly drier in the summertime and have seen higher levels of what we call vapor pressure deficit, basically a lower humidity overall that makes for better fire weather. So the extension of the fire season, the intensity of the fire season, makes it more likely that we see the right conditions for wildfire. Now, having the right conditions for wildfire doesn't necessarily mean you get wildfires, but when we get those conditions, it increases the risk overall.
If we are we experiencing more smoke from distant wildfires in Illinois? Is this a more frequent occurrence here, or how is that looking?
And I would say from the climate trend, there hasn't, these types of events, these wildfire smoke, they even under a changing climate, they haven't occurred all of that often. So it's hard to assess like a trend and how frequent they are. I will say that the events we experienced this year and then in 2023, they're consistent with how we should expect a warmer, drier summer to occur in that part of Canada and the central part of North America. And when we look forward into the future, at least from the climate signal, the risk of having a longer, more protracted, more intense wildfire season in that area is increasing with increased warming. So whether or not we've seen more frequent or how strongly the last couple of years are tied to climate change, the kind of future prognosis is likely more of this into the future, at least given the increased risk of wildfire.
We've been talking a lot about the meteorology and, you know, what are some of the potential impacts of this low air quality as a result of wildfire smoke. So that, I think, raises a lot of questions for people's health. One thing that I've seen going around the internet quite a bit or in newscasts is statements such as that if you are outside for working outside for 8 hours and there's an AQI of about 300, that's equivalent of smoking, say, 4 cigarettes. How bad does the air quality need to be for it to be hazardous to human health?
Yeah, I mean, certainly when we have an AQI of 300, or like we talked about in Chicago of 600, it's bad for everybody for any amount of time. Those extreme numbers, we need just to avoid being outside, you know, pretty much at all costs. But otherwise, you know, we have these categories for the AQI from the Environment Protection Agency that are like unhealthy for sensitive groups, and that can be a bit confusing. Now, essentially, those who are most vulnerable to when we have those air quality problems are those with the elderly in general, children in general, people with pre-existing health conditions, especially respiratory and pulmonary issues. So hypertension, I mentioned asthma, COPD. And so those are folks that really need to take the precaution, even at AQIs that may not otherwise be eye-popping, the 100 to 130 range. Also, there's an increasing literature and research around the impact to pregnant people, both for maternal health and fetal health. And what we're seeing is that prolonged exposure to wildfire smoke can cause significant problems both for the mother and the child. So that's one thing that we see not communicated quite as extensively that I definitely wanted to hit on, because more and more research is coming out to say that even without those pre-existing health conditions, pregnancy does put somebody at a higher risk.
Well, what are some things that people can do to keep themselves safe, or at least safer, especially for those who maybe don't have a choice about spending time outdoors?
Yeah. So if you do have a choice, try to stay indoors. If it is also important to understand, though, that if you're indoors, but you don't have an air filter on your HVAC system or have the windows open, your indoor air quality can be pretty bad as well. So having an indoor air monitor can be helpful, an indoor air filter. Even a portable one, you can usually pick those up for $20 or $30 for kind of a single room. That can at least be helpful. And if you notice that indoor air quality just can't improve, wearing a mask indoors is a good one, an N95 mask that we all remember from COVID. Those outdoors, just same kind of thing as we would for extreme heat. Taking breaks indoors as much as possible. Try not to overexert yourself. Obviously, the quicker your breathing is, the faster you're pulling those pollutants in. So making sure not to do a lot of vigorous activity. Wearing masks as much as possible, those kinds of things. And I will say, like, those who, when you say don't have a choice to be outdoors, if you're supervising people or in charge of people who are outdoors, give them a break indoors to make sure that we're not unnecessarily exposing people to the risk. And certainly any kind of events that are unnecessary, outdoor sporting events, concerts, things like that, as hard as it is, we really need to be proactive about making sure we're protecting people in those kind of poor air quality situations.
Trent, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Deanna.
Thanks, Deanna. Thanks for allowing us the opportunity to clear the air on this important topic.
Oh, gosh. We've been talking with Trent Ford, Illinois State Climatologist for the Prairie Research Institute, and Jeff Frame, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Science at the University of Illinois. I'm Deanna Hintz, associate professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you for joining us on Weather Realness. Do you have a weather or climate question you want us to answer? leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu.
Weather Realness is produced by Trent Ford, Jeff Frame, Deanna Hentz, Stephen Nesbitt, Stephanie Orellana, Eddie Wolf, and me, Joseph Trujillo Falcon. Production is partially funded by the Backland Charitable Trust. This podcast is a partnership between the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences and Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you for listening.